This is Backseat Box Office, episode number 340, for the weekend of March 1st through March 3rd. Hey, this is Jeff.
And this is Art.
And we are the Backseat Producers, and this is Backseat Box Office, a podcast where Art and myself talk about movies, TV, other media, and other forms of entertainment. We can basically talk about anything, but we try to keep it to those things. So, Art, how's it going over there?
It's going good. I had a upper respiratory infection. So the last two times we could have recorded, it was on me that we didn't. I was coughing up a lung and trying not to die, and I'm still here, so yay!
We're on the same team, man. It's not who we kid. All right. So I'm glad that you didn't die. What was your final diagnosis?
Just the upper respiratory infection.
Okay. So because you were talking about streptococcus or all that other stuff.
Yeah. I didn't know, but I sore throat. I mean, it was like a stabbing pain at times when I coughed, and you know, one of those people who hates to go to the doctor, and finally broke down, and you know.
Yeah. All right. Well, speaking of breakdowns, we have 3 weeks of box office business to get through, so we're going to change things up a little bit, because usually what we do is we just talk about what happened at the box office last week. But we can sit, when you consider that we haven't recorded in 3 weeks, and we're not going to go through each week, the box office results for each week for the last 3 weeks. So we're going to look at this the other way around. So we're going to end up talking about the following three movies, as far as I can find my list here. Okay, here we go. So we're going to talk about Lego Movie 2, Alita Battle Angel, and then How to Train Your Dragon. And we're pretty much going to talk about, you know, the opening and how it's currently doing. And Art will have plenty of time to chime in with any comments or what have you. All right. So the first movie we're going to talk about is the Lego Movie 2, the second part. So when this movie came out, its opening weekend, it did $34,115,000, which gave it the number one rank for that weekend. And looking kind of the weekends after that, here, I'm just going to click on view all three weekends. So the first week it did $34 million. The second week it did $20 million, so that was a 39% drop. And then the weekend after that was the 22nd through the 24th. It did about 9.6 million. So it ended up dropping 39% from first to second week, and then 53% from second week to third week. So right now that's leaving it at 84 million domestic and 52 million foreign. And so compared to the previous Lego movie, it did about almost half of what the original did.
Yeah.
And you can't
significantly less than Lego Batman.
Yes. And just for reference sake, it's been 5 years since the original Lego movie. So who knows what that will ultimately mean for the franchise. And just for argument's sake, there have been 4 Lego movies. Lego Movie, Lego Movie 2, Lego Batman that Art talked about, and then Lego Ninjago, which did even worse than Lego Movie 2.
I don't know that Ninjago counts.
What do you mean?
I don't know. It just seems like it was like not in the same kind of...
It had the Lego in the name, so we're going with it.
Okay. It's also from Warner Brothers, so all same studio, but I just feel like it didn't have the same push behind it that the other movies did.
True.
Seemed more of a niche, but I could be mistaken.
I mean, it was, I think, of all the other Lego movies, that's the only one that it's actually based on a TV show.
And right.
And the TV show was actually based on the toys, which, you know, all of them are kind of based on the toys. All right. So that was Lego Movie 2, and now we're going to talk about Alita Battle Angel. All right. So Alita Battle Angel, it's been in the theater for 2 weeks. So it opened President's Day weekend to an opening of $28.5 million, and that was in 3,790 theaters. And then in week two, it did $12.3 million, which is going to be a 56% drop, even though it did go up in 12 theaters, which is, you know, barely negligible. So it's been out for 2 weeks, but the domestic total is 63. I'm sorry, let me back up, because that 63 is going to have. So the 63 is going to count the dailies, not necessarily just the weekends as well. So far it's made $63.4 million. But the big number that you're going to want to hear is that foreign, it's done $203 million. So the domestic only accounts for 23.7% of the total revenue for this movie. So worldwide, it's made $267 million. So, probably means that could there be more? I mean, I don't know too much about the source material for this.
Yeah, this only just, as far as I know, only covers just like the beginning of the first like arc of the comic, the first arc of the anime. So, from my understanding, there's significantly more to be tapped.
So, see where it goes. Backtracking a little bit, so opening weekend it was the number one movie, and the second weekend it was the number two movie, behind the last movie on our list. All right, so now we're going to talk about the third movie. And this is the third movie in the series, whereas Lego Movie, you know, Lego Movie 2 obviously is the second one. And so here we go. How to Train Your Dragon: The Hidden World. Okay, so it's only been in the theater for one weekend, and that was last weekend. It pulled down $55 million. That's going to give it an average of $12,919 per screen. And they do have the budget listed for this movie at $129. I should say that since I'm looking at it, Alita, they said the budget's $170. So they're kind of in the green, maybe? Or in the black? I don't know. Okay. So we talked about the opening weekend for How to Train Your Dragon. How was the opening compared to the other two movies? This is the best opening of all three. How to Train Your Dragon 2 ended up with $49.4 million, and the original How to Train Dragon came out at $43.7 million. So it looks like, and they've said that this is going to be the last one, so I don't think, you know, the numbers are gonna influence, you know, more movies. I guess they can keep the TV series going.
Yeah, they can keep the TV series going. Hollywood is always in the quest to pursue more money. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. Maybe they'll do a reboot.
Okay, so that was kind of a different look at the box office for the last 3 weeks. And in addition to that, there really isn't anything coming out this weekend. Next weekend, we're going to have a big movie to talk about, being Captain Marvel.
Yes.
But we're not really going to look at the theater this weekend. But one thing that I've been doing is kind of latching on to the weird genres that Box Office Mojo lists for the movies that are in the top, or not necessarily top five, but all the movies. And like for Aquaman, we talked about underwater movies. And it'll be very simple for How to Train Your Dragon that we can talk about dragon focal point of movie genres, or the genre, as far as they talk about on Box Office Mojo. But I'm going to do something a little different. Considering we're going to be wrapping up February, I have another genre. And fortunately, I was able to find the master list, so you can just go alphabetically by genre. So for President's Day, or Days, holiday, we're going to talk about president movies. So according to the Box Office Mojo, movies about or starring the president, fictional and non-fictional, 1980 to present, And we're on the honor system here, Art. What do you think the number one movie is for president?
The number one movie about a president. Maybe JFK?
JFK is number nine.
Okay.
Studios, Warner Brothers, $70 million lifetime gross.
Okay, wait.
Even though they're saying that it peaked at 1,395 theaters.
Okay.
Which we wouldn't even talk about if it was coming out.
Right. An American president?
American president, maybe? Number 12.
Yeah, number 12. I'm going the wrong direction here.
That was 1995. By the way, JFK was 1991.
Right. Okay. More recent and presidenty.
So just looking at the top 10.
Yeah.
The most recent was 2013. Okay. We have three entries in 2013 that are in your top 10.
I don't know. I'm sure I know that. So let's not coming tonight.
Let's just run them down real quick. Number one, Independence Day. Remember we said fictional and non-fictional.
Okay, but it's not really I thought about it for a second because of the speech that he gives. Was it Bill Pullman?
Yeah, it was Bill Pullman.
But I thought, but that's not really a movie about the president. That movie's about aliens.
Okay, so that's definitely president adjacent.
President adjacent. Yeah. Okay.
Number two, we have Lincoln. $182 million. So there is a big disparity between. I mean, because obviously they're different movies. Number three, Air Force One. That was 1997, $172 million. Number four, here we go to the morass. Fahrenheit 9/11, which is the Michael Myers, came out in 2004, $119 million. Lee Daniels, The Butler. So this first one and the next two are all 2013, so the same year. Lee Daniels, The Butler, Olympus Has Fallen, and White House Down.
Okay.
116, 98, and 73, respectively. Number 8, Vantage Point. Number 9, JFK. Number 10, Dave.
Wow.
Okay. I didn't say these are great lists, man.
No. Okay. How about In the Line of Fire? Where is that? Is that on the list?
In the Line of Fire.
15, 16, somewhere down the way.
Let me look again. No. I am not seeing it.
Wow.
I'm not seeing it. Okay, some highlights from the list. Mars Attacks, number 16. Number 17, Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter.
Oh, brother.
Frost Nixon, 22. And the third grader in me would like to mention Dick for number 32. That made $6 million.
Okay. Are these by opener or what are these by?
It says lifetime gross. I'm not doing it by lifetime. I could. Sort it by opening. It didn't change too much. All right, so let's do a little.
In the Line of Fire had a lifetime gross of $102 million. Why is it not on the list?
Interesting. Does the president appear in it at any point during the movie?
I thought it was about an assassination attempt on the president.
Right.
And Eastwood plays one of the president's bodyguards.
Eastwood, or Russo, Dylan McDermott, Gary Cole, John Mahoney. It is number 8 on political thriller.
Okay.
But I think
it's.
It's
been a long time since I've seen it. Maybe the president is never actually shown, and it's just about the duel between the assassin and the bodyguard. I don't know.
There is an email at the bottom. That we could send an email to Box Office Mojo and call. We're calling BS. Unless you want a subpoena for a congressional hearing, you're going to put this movie on the president list. Or a subpoena. I guess a subpoena for grand jury. Please don't. Okay. Anyways, that's info@boxofficemojo.com. info@boxofficemojo.com. This is the grassroots that we want to start. Anyways, just kidding, guys. All right. So let me go back. All right. So that's going to end this little farcical segment about president movies. So what are we going to do next week? We'll have to see. Okay. So at this point in the show, we just finished our segment number one, and we're totally bypassing segment number two. So we're going to go to segment number three, which is share time. This is the part of the show where Art and myself will talk about what we've been up to as far as entertainment. Mostly could cover movie, TV, stream services, Maybe a game or two. We'll talk about board games, maybe. But first, it is our duty to play any voicemails, and we have one voicemail from our friend Tad. So please prepare to hear Tad talk about what he's been watching. So take it away, Tad.
Hello, Art and Jeff. This is Tad calling in with what I've been watching. Well, I'm almost through The Punisher Season 2. I'm liking it pretty well. I think I talked about that a little bit last time I called in. I can't remember for sure. Anyway, main thing I've been watching is my sister-in-law was in town, and she put on Stargate SG-1, and I've never really watched any of those. I always kind of thought about, oh, maybe I will, you know, I don't know. Never really have, though. But I've just finished the first season of Stargate SG-1, and I'm going to go through that and then probably watch all the rest of them. I'm really enjoying it. I like it quite a bit. I can tell that it's a little bit. I think it was, I'm trying to think of when it was in the 90s. Was when they were making that show, I think. And you can kind of tell, but it's, you know, it holds up pretty well. I'm not really having any problems with it. I'm liking the show. So that's kind of what I've been watching. Haven't really been to any movies lately. Hasn't really been too much I've wanted to go see. But I'll let you guys know when I do and if I find any other good shows. All right, thanks a lot, guys. I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
All right, Tad, thank you very much. Always nice to hear from you. Yeah, it's been a long time. And, you know, what's interesting to me is this voicemail was sent in the beginning of February. And, you know, and he kind of runs down all of the Marvel shows that are on Netflix, which in this point in time are all canceled.
Yep.
So it's really, yeah, it's really sad, because, you know, they get a lot of crap for some, you know, lackluster episodes or maybe whole seasons of these, but, you know, we enjoyed them. The only thing we know is that we don't know what form they're going to take, if those characters are ever going to come back. So we can only hope that there will be more Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, and Iron Fist, and Punisher.
Yeah, I don't know. I went round and round with a guy the other day on Facebook that, you know, because there are people out there saying that, you know, they were underperforming, that they weren't doing as good as they wanted them to. But I know plenty of people who were watching them who were specifically just happy to have a Netflix subscription because of these shows. And I can't see – there's a lot of programming they do that mm-hmm. I feel like they have the money. I don't see why they wouldn't continue producing it other than the fact that they're losing these licenses. Like, it is going away. They're producing content they're not going to be able to keep showing. So it's producing it and it's not going to go anywhere. They're not going to get to keep showing it. And so there's no point from that respect. There are people who are like, you know, it's not going to end up on the Disney streaming service. You know, I'm like, you can't say that. I mean, why wouldn't it? Why wouldn't Disney pay the money? You know, we talked, the last time we talked about how they're going to spend something like $14 billion on content for their streaming service. Mm-hmm. They have the money to say, yeah, we'll snap that up and we'll put it on our thing now. And we'll do something to continue that, you know? Somebody talked about, you know, they'd put any R content on there. I'm like, I don't know. If they really want it to take off, it's very easy to separate your content. You know, Netflix does it now. You know, I have a specific channel that, you know, all the kids' content is on for Aubrey, and then I have my own channel where all the content is on. It's not that hard to do. So
there could be an evolution of Disney Plus to where they split the streaming service to where it's like all Marvel. I've been saying for years, well, not really, I mean years, I mean probably the last 3 weeks, that someone needs to, and this is completely independent of what we've been talking about, when are we going to get our 24-hour Friends channel? Because when I get home, usually there isn't anything on broadcast that I want to watch. And I just right. I just have friends on for some reason. It's friends and mom is basically what. And I'm not sitting and watching like I would like I was watching Killjoys or something like that. I just have it on in the background.
Right.
But I mean, they could totally do something that for, you know, just have a Marvel one where they can just play Marvel 24 hours because you know, we really don't have that. But we're getting to a point to where they're gonna have plenty of stuff to reshow. In addition to the new run stuff, and I can totally see you know, Disney specializing like that.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
No, 100%. It'll be interesting to see where it all shakes out, you know.
All right. So Tad, thank you for the voicemail and the conversation starter, at least. So now let's give Art the spotlight. What have you been up to?
All right. Okay, so in the last few weeks, I have watched several movies. So starting with, I finally went and watched Ant-Man and the Wasp. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I don't know why it is. This is the second time I haven't seen Ant-Man until watching it at home. And it really was a good enough movie. I should have caught it in the theaters. And I don't know why. I have no excuse. It came, it went, I missed it, and then I caught it on the back end. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was everything I wanted it to be. The ending, you know, tying it in with Avengers, worked really nicely, and I can't wait to see the continuation of that story when the next Avengers installment rolls around. I saw the Lego Movie 2, the second part. It was good. I enjoyed it. It was not the first movie, for sure. And I can see how it did not do as well. It's not surprising. It'll still have a life on home video and DVD and whatnot. And kids, you know, Aubrey thoroughly enjoyed it. She thought it was just as good as the first one. I think her memory is a little clouded, you know, as kids often do. This is the new shiny thing, and she's very happy with it. And that's really all it needed to do. Brittany was really disappointed in it. I thought it was good, but it could have been better. She was like, the first one was 10 times better than this. I'm like, I don't know about all that. Let's see. Did I tell you about starting to watch Lucifer?
No, but go ahead. You might have told me. I just don't remember.
I don't think I did. I don't think I did because I got maybe I had just started it. I think I'm about 10 to 15 episodes in now. I'm really enjoying the show. It's about I think they got 3 seasons available, and it's basically the devil has come to L.A. and he hooks up with this homicide detective, and it's all about kind of the ins and outs and intrigues of the devil walking on earth and kind of he's, you know, doing his fallen angel role. And it's very interesting. I'm enjoying it a lot. And last but not least, I went and saw How to Train Your Dragon 3. And it was really good. It capped off the trilogy very well. It left it in a very good place. I was really happy with it. Everybody thoroughly enjoyed it. And it's a worthy successor to the other two movies. It's definitely worth seeing if you've seen the other two. If not, go watch the other two and then go watch it, because it was really, really good. And that wraps up my share time, good sir.
Interesting. Interesting. Okay. So last time, I believe I mentioned we were on season 7 of Game of Thrones.
Okay.
We have completed rewatching the entire Game of Thrones, and my daughter cannot wait. And usually every couple days I have to hear about another theory video about what happens with this character. Is this because there is a prophecy and, you know, kind of like the Chosen One in Star Wars? Who's going to be the Chosen One to save everybody? And no one knows who it is. I went through and watched most of all the special features that are on the Blu-rays. And I don't remember what season it is, but you get an extra Blu-ray that it's a 45-minute oral history of the Targaryen Civil War that is just excellent. And I feel like I might have to go read the books now. Funny story about Game of Thrones is in Rancho last week, it snowed for the first time that I can remember that we've ever lived here. You know, since we've been living here for 16 years now. And my daughter had to pull over and take a picture of the mountain because the mountain looked exactly like the mountain at a pivotal point in the Game of Thrones. And she said, it was so weird because I just had a nightmare that White Walkers blew through our high school and killed everybody. so we are greatly anticipating in April that the last season. I have friends that are nervous because they don't know because they're past the books. They probably have plot points. But who knows? But I also got the opportunity to finally play Game of Thrones Hand of King with her, and she loved that. She loved that well because that game, when you watch the TV show, you have irrational strategies because you definitely right. want this person because you hated him, or you know, you want to get rid of that person because you hated him, or you want to get that person because you loved him, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, and now I have a bunch of people from her school that want to borrow the Blu-rays, and I said that's not going to happen because I don't know your weirdo friends. Okay, so that was right. Game of Thrones, and now she said, well, what are we going to watch now? We've been rewatching Community, and she also, you know, Community, she said one of the funniest things she's seen, and I'm enjoying rewatching things with her. And so I've been rewatching those two things, and, you know, I don't watch a lot of Netflix for one reason. I have shame that I have not watched all the Marvel stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So the last thing I watched, I think, season one of Iron Fist. No, let me take it back. I think I'm on tape as watching the first episode of Punisher season two. So I'm so far behind, and now I'm feeling more pressure because you don't know how long it's going to be on Netflix.
Right.
Right? We were just talking about that.
Yeah.
So, but I still watch something non-Marvel that just came out because it's a show that I love. And season three of One Day at a Time came out a couple weeks ago. Now, I'm kind of measuredly watching it non-binge style. I'm not just going front to back because I remember last season I got sad when it was over so quick. So, my daughter started watching it and I'm not allowed to watch it without her. You know, okay. This kind of thing. It's really good. It's some of the writing. I mean, they did this. Okay, so the first episode, spoiler alert for anyone that doesn't want to know about it, you know, plot details of a sitcom, but the first episode, there's a death in the family. And so it's an aunt. And so they're all talking about, is it Tia Mustache? Or is it Tia Bitchy? Or is it Tia Jack Sparrow? And it's all Tia Jack Sparrow. Yeah, she had scarlet fever when she was young, so she only has one eye, so she always wears an eye patch. Kind of thing, right? And so they're going through all this, and you know, Snyder the gringo is sitting there, even though he's starting to take Spanish, he's listening to Spanish on, you know, learn Spanish on tape or whatever, and they're talking about that, well, I don't want to go to the funeral because this is the grandmother, I don't want to go to the funeral because of my, you know, my sister, you know, we avoid each other now. You know, why you avoid each other? Well, because she took the mantilla, right? And then Snyder's like, is that like a transgender thing, mantilla? So no. It's a little cloth that you get to, you know. It was a solid joke, and it's just the, and so they are kind of advancing the story a little bit. They're gonna, you know, they dropped in a little anxiety and anxiety attacks and how it can be hereditary kind of thing. And so they do a good job of doing topical. Things they got a lot of praise for. They did an entire episode about the Me Too and the sexual assault and harassment and that kind of thing. And the way they did it, you couldn't do on normal television because there was like a 16-minute scene where they're just sitting around talking about things that happened in their experiences, kind of thing, which you can't do nowadays, like on broadcast, because you can't do anything longer than 8 minutes because you got to break for commercials. So, you know, and we're going to be talking later in the news about how Netflix, is changing things, which isn't really breaking news, but, just, how things are going. So I'm 10 episodes in, I'm loving it. But, you know, you were talking about how certain things are getting pulled off of Netflix. And, you know, we think that, you know, they have enough money. Why are they pulling anything? Well, I think with Netflix being in the next age for their corporation, they're looking at ratings and views more. And even though everyone that I know of that enjoys sitcoms as much as I do has watched One Day at a Time, there's rumors that this is going to be the last season because the numbers aren't as great as they're expecting. Which it's really sad that they're kind of getting that network attitude about that we have to have ratings at the beginning. You know, 3 or 4 years ago, you didn't hear about any of that stuff.
Right.
So now there's a there's like a Twitter campaign that they want, you know, they want a season 4 kind of thing. So in any event, I'm greatly enjoying One Day at a Time. And haven't seen any new movies. There was one classic that I've been trying to track down for the kids because I kind of, you know, I showed them the Tom Hanks comedies that I remember, or at least one of them, The Burbs.
Burbs
and,
classic.
And there's some, you know, some other ones that I want to track down, but you know, Netflix doesn't have everything, or Amazon Prime. So, but on BBC America on Monday, Real Genius was on.
Nice.
So me and my son, we watched Real Genius, because I told my son, I think this movie and what was the other one? Oh, Revenge of the Nerds and Airplane pretty much formed my sense of humor when I was his age, kind of thing. I haven't trotted out Airplane yet or Revenge of the Nerds, because there's too many uncomfortable things in Revenge of the Nerds, I think. But Real Genius, he actually laughed at all the appropriate times, and there's some things that are kind of dated, but it's still, I mean, I kind of want to watch it again because I just love that movie so much. Real Genius. Catch it if you can. I'm probably thinking now that's on BBC that it's going to be on 10 times a week now. So that was my share time. I did go to a game convention, had a great time, played lots of games, blah, blah, blah. So that was President's Day weekend of the 15th through the 18th. That was my weekend. Oh, and I have to do a shout out to Andrew, one of the original hosts of Backseat Box Office, and he was also a fan like I was that used to hang out in the Ustreams for Backseat Producers way back when. He absolutely made my year with an Instagram post last week. This is the first time that this has ever happened. He decided to buy a game based on my review.
Nice.
He said he went out and bought Dice Throne Season 1 because I liked it or something like that. And I just can't, you know. That's the first time it's ever happened. So, Andrew, I'm nervous. I hope you like it. thanks, Andrew. Me and my son, we've had countless good matches with Dice Throne, and I had a couple of friends that's all they want to play. I don't need to bring anything else. They just want to do Dice Throne. That was a very neat thing that you did, Andrew. Thank you. Okay. Trying to think if there's anything else. Probably not. So now we're going to go to the last segment of the show. We're going to talk about news. So this is anything that true or fake that we might find interesting for us. And maybe the listeners too. So, Art, what do you got?
All right, I'm going to lead off with A is for Aquaman. Aquaman's sequel set for December 2022 release. December 16th has been set as the release date for the Aquaman sequel. The sequel will bring back star Jason Momoa, but almost all other details are under wraps at this point, including director and other castmates. It is confirmed that David Leslie Johnson McGoldrick, who co-wrote the first film, is back for the follow-up. James Wan and Peter Safran will produce, but whether Wan returns to direct is the big question and unknown at this time. The first film opened in December and made $1.14 billion worldwide at the box office. So we have a long 3-year wait ahead of us. Who knows what other movies will come between now and then, but I thoroughly enjoyed Aquaman and can't wait for more.
All right, so I'm going to lead off with Netflix. One thing that we, I guess, I don't know if we're going to talk about it at all, but the Oscars were last weekend. And I have this article from The Motley Fool, where you can find fool.com. We have Netflix makes Oscar history. This is a huge win for the streaming giant, both in terms of prestige and its efforts to keep and add subscribers. And so the big news story that coming out of the Oscars with Netflix is that Roma won Best Cinematography and Best Director for Alfonso Cuarón.
Hmm.
And first, let me see. But that's not really the history that it won Oscars for that. Sunday night, the streaming giant tied Walt Disney, 21st Century Fox, and Comcast-owned Universal for the most Oscar wins by a studio this year, taking home four statues. Even more importantly, those wins came in several high-profile categories after years of Netflix-only achieving nods for its documentaries. This followed a similar performance at the Golden Globes last month, when Netflix nabbed five wins, more than any other network, studio, or streaming service. But winning Oscar gold goes far beyond mere bragging rights. The wins will help Netflix attract top talent and raise its profile among current and future subscribers. So it says a big night. Roma, it won three. Best Director, Best Cinematography, and Best Foreign Language Film. And Cuarón is the first person in Oscar history to win the award for Best Cinematography for a movie that they also directed. They also got Best Documentary Short Subject for Period End of Sentence. And so they say here, Netflix coveted Oscar wins send a message to both current and potential subscribers about the quality of the major motion pictures being created by Netflix's film studio. It's been long known for its superiority of its television series. Last year, Netflix made history by tying AT&T's HBO and taking home 23 Emmys. It also helps attract the best filmmakers in Hollywood by letting them know that creating movies exclusively for Netflix won't keep them from receiving major awards consideration. Roma was the poster child for that argument, taking home a host of awards this season. In addition to three Oscars, Roma also won two Golden Globes and four BAFTAs, which is the British Academy of Film and Television Arts Awards, including Best Film, Best Cinematography, and Best Director. Let me see here. This was all part of a larger push by Netflix. The streaming service broke with its long-standing tradition, giving several of its high-profile films an exclusive theatrical window before they debuted on Netflix's streaming platform. The company has long supported day and date release when a film is available for subscribers on the same day it's released in theaters. Roma got a 3-week theatrical run before being available to Netflix customers. Other prestige projects were given similar treatment, including the Coen Brothers Western anthology that should be familiar to listeners of Backseat Producers, The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, Andy Serkis's Mowgli, Legend of the Jungle, and, oh, you might have heard about Bird Box. So yeah, Netflix is been doing some good things.
Yeah,
but you know, they're doing better and better, and you know, we'll see what the struggle leads to with Netflix movies and theaters. You know, because they kind of mentioned that some of these got three week releases, so we'll see.
Yeah, and was that specifically to get around the how some of the awards show, like they Netflix butted heads with the Cannes Film Festival over it, you know, not having an official French release, or if it had a French release, it can't go to streaming for like 3 years.
Yeah.
You know, it just, so is this part of that where it has to have a theatrical release for some amount of time for it to even be eligible for the Oscars?
Right.
So yeah, I don't know. Okay. Well, from the very, very high brow to the very, very low brow, yes, they are making a Viewmaster movie.
I didn't even have to have that open because I know you're going to talk about that.
MGM and Mattel Films are teaming up to develop a live-action feature film based on the toy company's classic personal projector toy, the Viewmaster. The stereoscopic eye device launched at the 1939 New York World's Fair. That means it's 80 years old. Bringing 3D images of tourist attractions to the populace and exploded in popularity in the 1950s, remained a childhood staple for decades. Mattel acquired the brand, which by then had expanded into audio and projection in 1987. Modern Viewmasters now involve smartphone tech and VR. No writer or filmmaker is attached to this time. Nobody wants to give their name out. Alex Kurtzman and Bob Orci were attached to a previous version set up at DreamWorks a decade ago. Mattel is continuing development of new He-Man, Barbie, and Hot Wheels movies. So He-Man, Barbie, Hot Wheels, and Viewmaster all coming to theaters near you. Maybe. Hmm. Hopefully. Hopefully not. What do you got?
Okay. So this is kind of a, well, it's not too long of an article. So continuing on the Oscars tip here, Medium.com has old Hollywood and new Hollywood go to war at the Oscars. And so the war is basically over Green Book. Okay, so Green Book's triumph at the 91st Annual Academy Awards, winning Best Picture over popular nominees such as Black Panther and Roma, has revived a debate on whether the Academy Awards are relevant anymore. How could a Best Picture Oscar go to a widely scorned movie about race relations directed by the same guy responsible for Dumb and Dumber? This David Deal says, I think the Academy Awards are more relevant than ever, but not as a barometer of popular taste. Rather, the Oscars symbolize a battle between old Hollywood and new Hollywood. And during the Oscars telecast, both sides scored victories. Old Hollywood is largely composed of white men who make crowd-pleasing movies distributed through traditional movie theaters. At the Oscars, old Hollywood was symbolized by Jim Burke, Brian Hayes Curry, Nick Vallelonga, and Charles B. Wessler, who produced Green Book, and Peter Farrelly, who produced, directed, and co-wrote Green Book. New Hollywood is a more diverse group that includes people of color who are willing to make more personal movies about people of color. New Hollywood is also open to distributing movies outside of the traditional theater system. New Hollywood's most prominent ambassador at the Oscars was Alfonso Cuarón, whose Roma was distributed by Netflix and nominated for 10 Oscars. But for most of the ceremony, New Hollywood had the upper hand. Seven black artists won Oscars, the most in Academy Awards history. For example, Ruth Carter won the costume design category for her work on Black Panther. She is one of only two black costume designers to be nominated since the Academy Awards created the category in 1949. Hannah Beechler became the first black designer to receive a nomination and a win in the production design category for Black Panther. Roma won Oscars for foreign language film, directing, and cinematography. These were major coups for Netflix, and Netflix would win four Oscars before Knives Over, which I just got done talking about. And then we have Black Klansman, Black Panther, and Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, which featured a biracial Spider-Man, took home five awards between them, including the first ever competitive Oscar for Black Klansman director and co-writer Spike Lee. Sure, New Hollywood would quibble over Green Book winning an original screenplay, but until Best Picture was announced, the evening looked like a victory for the vanguards of a more diverse and daring group of filmmakers, until Green Book spoiled the party. The shock of Green Book winning reverberated immediately on social media, even as the group of overwhelmingly white producers and cast stood on stage and accepted the award. And as if on cue, critics lashed out savagely, with Justin Chang of the LA Times calling the movie the worst Best Picture winner since Crash. Green Book was and continues to be criticized as a cringeworthy attempt by a largely white power structure to sugarcoat race relations. The movie has also been accused of perpetuating the myth of the magical Negro and the white savior. And the movie's troubled production history certainly has not won any fans. For one thing, Mahershala Ali, who is as symbolic of the exciting talent emerging from New Hollywood as anyone, won actor in a supporting role for his portrayal of Don Shirley in Green Book. He had previously won an Oscar for Moonlight, becoming the first Muslim to win an Oscar. And the Best Picture win also meant a shared Oscar for Green Book executive producer Octavia Spencer, another vibrant symbol of New Hollywood, whose next production, Ma, launches May 31st. In fact, Green Book represents both a death rattle of old Hollywood and a passing of the reins of power to New Hollywood through the involvement of Octavia Spencer and Mahershala Ali. In addition, the success of Green Book, distributed by an old Hollywood studio, Universal Pictures, may tempt filmmakers to work with an alternative New Hollywood distributor, such as Netflix or Amazon Studios, if they want to make intensely personal movies that reflect diverse voices and cultures. And so here's a quote from Mr. Cuarón about Roma. My question to you is, how many theaters did you think that a Mexican film in black and white, in Spanish and Mixtico, that is drama without stars, how big do you think it would be as a conventional theatrical release? I just hope the discussion between Netflix and platforms in general should be over. I think those guys, platforms, and theatricals should go together. They both together can elevate cinema, and more important, they can create a diversity in cinema. Netflix now has an opportunity to burnish its image as a home for New York Hollywood, new Hollywood movie makers who don't want to make the next Green Book. In addition, Netflix can attract old Hollywood filmmakers who want to make risky films that old Hollywood won't touch. An example being Martin Scorsese's forthcoming movie, The Irishman, with that being distributed by Netflix. Where did it go? So that's pretty much the end of that, but I just wanted to talk about The Irishman. That's probably going to be a big Oscar contender for Netflix. They're going to have, for the cast, they're going to have Robert De Niro, Al Pacino, Joe Pesci, and Harvey Keitel, directed by Scorsese. So, and Scorsese said no movie studio wanted to touch it for 7 years. So we'll have to keep an eye on that. All right, so that's my long-winded rundown of some things that are happening at the Oscars now, or in Hollywood.
Yeah, I listened to a podcast, Unspooled. It's kind of a spinoff from How Did This Get Made, and Paul Scheer and another lady whose name I forget, and I feel really bad for that. Paul Scheer, I just know him because I've listened to so much of How Did This Get Made.
Is that June Diane Raphael or something like that?
No, that's his wife, and she's on June Diane Raphael, and she's on How Did This Get Made on him. This is another lady who's on the, they're going down the AFI 100 list, and they did she and another person did a recap of the Oscars on Monday, and they actually really upset me to the point where I'm considering writing in something about it, because they were very, very upset at Green Book's win, to the point of like personally attacking and mocking the director. He also released at some point did a Christmas album. Mm-hmm. And they played a song from the album, and we're just literally sitting there laughing at, you know, the music. And it's like, how is it that these people who are kind of bastions of liberalism and you know, so constantly preaching this, you know, we must accept people for who they are.
Well, Laura, everything is, you know, it's like we're trying to strive to be an inclusive society.
Right.
Yeah.
Can sit there and laugh at something that somebody's passionate about.
Right.
You know, it's fine to say, I don't like this. Okay. Mm-hmm. But it's another thing to specifically pull it out of the ether and point and laugh at it. And I found it very upsetting. I was like, you know, this is, you know, you're not happy about it. Say, you know what, I didn't enjoy the movie, and move on. And don't try and tear it down. Don't try and, you know, it's enough to have your opinion out there where it doesn't have to be, I hate this thing and it bothers me that it won. You know, okay, I don't like it, move on. You know, you don't have to ridicule over it. And it was really upsetting. So we'll see. Things are definitely, there's upheaval going on in Hollywood.
Yeah.
All right. On a much, much lighter note, Hotel Transylvania sets a December 2021 date. Sony Pictures had set Wednesday, December 22nd, 2021. So closer than Aquaman. By a year, for a fourth film in the Hotel Transylvania animated franchise. The sequel will open opposite the long-in-the-works Wicked film adaptation at Universal Pictures, an untitled live-action Disney film, and an untitled animated film at Warner's. Avatar 3 is also out at about the same time. So that seems to be a very hotly contested December in 2021. Here's something I did not realize. Do you know who directed all three of the Hotel Transylvania movies?
No.
Genndy Tartakovsky, the guy who did the original short
Clone Wars.
The Clone Wars, yeah.
Did the Clone Wars.
Yeah. I know. I recognize the name immediately. Oh, my goodness, Clone Wars. I had no idea. I'm sure at some point we probably did talk about this. But it's just seeing it in print again that he directed all three of these films. And I've enjoyed all three of them. So it really comes as no surprise. So fourth movie in the works, 2 years out at this point.
Yeah, hold on a second. I got it. Because this was actually talked about on the ERC box office Twitter account. Okay, it says, I want to suck the blood out of your beaten dead horse. Hey, if Toy Story can do it, why not Sony's Hotel Transylvania? Part 4 drops sometime for Christmas 2021 on December 22nd. And then at Spectre14 says, this is what happens when a third installment barely drops from the second. So I was gonna look real quick. So here's the numbers for your three Hotel Transylvania movies. First one grossed $148 million with an opening of $42 million. Not bad. Hotel Transylvania 2, $169 million, $48.5 million. And then Hotel Transylvania 3 opened at $44 million. So you're looking at three releases in the 40-plus range.
Mm.
And I'm pretty sure that fourth one's going to hit 40 as well.
Right.
So, yeah, they're just printing money at this point.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, so kind of to dovetail in the Oscar discussion, a lot of people were very happy that no Disney or Pixar property won the Oscar for Best Animated Movie. It ended up going to Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. And so there's, you know, a lot of credit going around for that movie. So how is co-director Bob Persichetti, how is he going to use that success to elevate his career? He's going to be doing Puss in Boots too. This new film, a follow-up to the Oscar-nominated Shrek franchise spinoff, which was released in 2011 and grossed more than $550 million worldwide, will be familiar territory for Persichetti, who served as head of story on and voiced a role in the original. So, not as exciting as Spider-Man, but I guess work is work at this point. All right, what do you got next?
Okay, next up, Bond 25, it gets a title. So it is going to be Shatterhand. This
what?
Was
okay,
a...
Go ahead.
Yeah, no. Let me finish. this is a kind of a code name that Blofeld has taken on at times, and it was actually used for the Brosnan Tomorrow Never Dies. So everyone's saying it's just a placeholder. This is not the official name that will get released on the day that the way they typically do this is that on the day actual production filming starts, they have a press release for what the actual name is going to be. So here we come to the end of Daniel Craig's run as Bond. They're looking for some real wrap-ups with that particular story arc. He's going to go out with a bang, and so that's the information that we have so far. For Bond 25.
Hmm. Yeah. All right. So this is more a business story, but I thought this was pretty interesting. Disney in talks to acquire Warner's Hulu share. So a lot of pub happened when Disney bought Fox, and they thought, oh my God, they're going to get, you know, Fantastic Four and X-Men and all this stuff. But it looks like there's something else that could affect our media viewing lives. With the Fox-Disney deal set to be completely closed in about 2 weeks, Disney wants to have even more control over Hulu and are reportedly in active discussions with AT&T to acquire WarnerMedia's 10% stake in the streaming joint venture. Currently, they're sitting at 30% at a 30% stake in Hulu. But when the merger completes, they're getting Fox's 30%, which is mean they're going to have 60. And if they roll in the 10% from Warner Media, that means they're going to have 70%. So NBCU CEO Steve Burke said to the trades last month that Disney would like to buy him out, but he doesn't think that'll happen in the near term. Under Disney's control, Hulu will stay focused on adult-oriented general entertainment fare, while the forthcoming Disney Plus subscription product will be for more family-friendly fare. The news comes as AT&T on Tuesday prevailed in court in a court challenge by a Department of Justice that attempted to block their takeover Time Warner. It is considered the last hurdle that had to be cleared from that merger. So now that I've read it, I don't know exactly what that last part means. but they're already diversifying their streaming platforms. That the you know the Disney content that they want to have not necessarily be family friendly, they can drop on Hulu. At least that's a plan. If that plan is gonna come to fruition, who knows? But I thought it was interesting that Disney also has irons in the Hulu fire, kind of thing. All right, so we got next.
Okay, so Marvel's Fahey on 2020 and Widow. My page just crashed. Here we go. Almost 5 years ago, Marvel Studios held an event which laid out the plans for their Phase 3 film, setting the release dates and titles for the films through 2019, and despite the odd subtraction or addition, that schedule has been followed. We're now at the end of that cycle with Captain Marvel in March, Avengers Endgame in April, and Spider-Man Far From Home in July this year. After that, no one really knows, as nothing has set a date as yet, and while numerous potential films are close to production, Marvel Studios hasn't actually started filming any of them yet. Speaking with Cinema Blend this week, Marvel Studios Chief Kevin Feige says we shouldn't expect to learn what films will be on the slate until after Spidey's second film is in cinemas. The game plan is to not reveal the game plan until after Endgame and Far From Home, and wanting the focus to be, of course, on Captain Marvel, Endgame, Far From Home, and what will really be a 23-movie journey, and there'll be plenty of time to talk about what comes after that. The most likely film to take the early 2020 release slot will be Black Widow, as it won't require as much visual effects as something like Doctor Strange 2 or The Eternals, which are also expected to be headed towards filming sometime this year. Speaking with comicbook.com, Feige shut down a rumor that has swirled about Black Widow in recent months that it will be Marvel's first R-rated film. As to the rumor was false, he says, yes, correct. It was never going to be. Somebody writes, I hear it's R-rated, and then everybody writes it up. He also tells them there's no set limit in terms of the number of films they're turning out in the future. There are no mandates to make any more than two films a year. As we've seen in the last couple of years, when it naturally happens and when there are ideas and when there are teams ready to go, we're not going to hold something back. We'll make it. Captain Marvel is our next film in cinemas, arriving March 8th, just around the corner, and I can't hardly wait.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. All right. Time for another Art Santos pandering story.
Okay.
Who's AOC?
The Alexandria something Cortez.
Yeah, Ocasio-Cortez.
Ocasio-Cortez, yeah.
Okay. Hot off the press, the virtual press from Vice.com. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's underdog story is now officially becoming a comic book. She's Wonder Woman, but better because she fights rich assholes. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, or her crusade to take on the Washington establishment, is now a comic book specially crafted for the cross-section of comic fans and political junkies. It says, Alexandria Cortez and the Freshman's Force, : New Party Who Dis. Out May 15th from Devil's Due Comics. Features the stories of AOC and other progressive women shaking up the halls of Congress created by dozens of artists from around the country. The stories run from the gamut from cute and sweet to cathartic venting stories to just irreverent fun plots, with all with the general theme that this is pro-AOC, pro-New Congress project, Devil's Due publisher Josh Blaylock told Vice. As of yet, there's no over... it says over-aching plot. The stories build towards, but each give their own interpretation of this current moment in politics. In a page given the TMZ, AOC is a super jack wrestler who defeats her former Democratic opponent Joe Crowley in the ring and then bumps into an even more jack Nancy Pelosi with a six-pack in the locker room. So the subtitle comes from a tweet she sent in January responding to an old-school former Democratic Senator Joe Lieberman who told Fox Business he hopes she's not the future of the party. That was an awesome lightning in a bottle moment, Blaylock said. It was hilarious to see Joe Lieberman, a perfect example of this tired, old, outdated system, commenting on the future and Ocasio-Cortez with such a millennial response. But what really lit a fire into Blaylock to work on this project was a tweet from AOC in which he quotes the popular Watchmen graphic novel, sending comic fans into a frenzy. The tweet was in response to a quote tweet that linked back to a Politico article with the headline, "Exasperated Democrats Try to Rein in Ocasio-Cortez." She wrote, to quote Alan Moore, "None of you understand. I'm not locked in here with you. You're locked up in here with me." When I saw her Alan Moore quote, on top of her jumping into a feed of a guy playing Donkey Kong 64 to talk about trans rights, and see that she's a League of Legends fan, I thought there's too much nerd press going on here, Blaylock said. If we don't do this right now, someone else is going to beat us to it. Blaylock got the book on the radar of comic book stores just in time for a May release and started calling up dozens of friends in the comic world. The response was immediately great. We have a diverse group of talent. We have people from all over the country. I'm excited to see everything coming in. Contributing artists are also some of the biggest heavyweights in the industry, like Jill Thompson, known for her work on Wonder Woman comics, and Tim Seeley, who's working on G.I. Joe and Transformers comics. So there's a bunch of other stuff talking about the production. So, yeah, I just thought, Art, you should know about that.
I saw that actual quote go by, and I actually shared it on my timeline. I had to explain it to someone. We were talking about Sam earlier, pre-show. I actually had to explain to Sam. He had never seen Watchmen.
And, boy.
I'm like, oh, you're missing out, dude. You got to go watch Watchmen.
All right, what do you got next?
All right, so Stallone turns superhero in Samaritan. And this caught my eye, A, Sylvester Stallone, and B, Samaritan. It really, it's ringing a bell. I'm going to have to go see if this is, it doesn't say in the article whether or not this is based on any particular property, but I thought there was a Samaritan superhero. I'm sure there is, but whether or not this has anything to do with it or not, I don't know. Sylvester Stallone is attached to star in the superhero film Samaritan, which MGM has acquired in a competitive bidding situation. Braggy F. Schutt Escape Room penned the spec script, which is dubbed a dark, fresh take on the superhero genre. The story centers on a boy learning that a missing superhero who vanished 20 years earlier after a battle may still be alive. Balboa Productions will produce and develop the project in conjunction with MGM. Stallone and Braden Aftergood will produce, the pair having several projects in development, including the adaptation of James Byron Huggins' novel Hunter, an adaptation of the FBI memoir Ghost, and special op set film penned by retired Army Ranger Max Adams. So different spin coming from another studio on superheroes with Sylvester Stallone. You have me interested.
All right, so that's gonna my news. Do you have anything
else? That wraps me up as well, sir.
All right, so that's gonna do it for this episode of Backseat Box Office. So thank you for listening. The website for this show and the Backseat Producers podcast is backseatproducers.com. You can go there to find episodes of Backseat Producers or back episodes of this show. You can also leave us a voicemail like Tad and tell us what you've been up to. You can call the voicemail line at 618-207-4794. Again, that's 618-207-4794. And so other than that, I think that's going to be it. So, again, thanks for listening. And, Art, what do you want to say?
Good night, everybody. Go watch a movie. Call us up and tell us about it.